This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome again to another edition of the program. Coming up today, China bans luxury goods advertising. We're going to have the full story from our correspondent on the ground. And then later on, I'm going to be joined by Rick O'Shea, a good friend of mine. We go back about almost, 12 years now. And we're going to be talking about the future of commercial radio and what it has in store. We have this, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus. Yes, I think so. I hope it is. And if you're not listening to this show, you're listening to something else. And I really don't know what to say. Oy. Now, normally at this point of the program, I always say, now time for Paulette McQuarrie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media. Well, we're taking a little time off this week because I'm doing a little bit of traveling, so we're not going to bring you that. But anyway, let's now move on to today's program. China has moved to ban advertising of a range of luxury items on state radio and television. The banning of luxury items, including watches, rare stamps, gold coins, is effective immediately. In April, billboards in Beijing promoting luxury lifestyles have removed words such as luxury, royal, supreme, and high class from their advertising. Now, this is not just, of course, in radio and television, but also in print. To find out more, here's Kandahar Sapati.
With China's economy booming and its middle class and millionaires growing in leaps and bounds, it has become the haven for luxury goods seeking a growing market. From luxury cars to exclusive watches, high-end liquor and top-end designer goods, they can all be found in China's major cities. But given the widening income gap, China fears advertisements of luxury items could create social discontent. Rajiv Biswas is the Asia-Pacific chief economist for consulting agency IHS Global.
They're particularly worried about the risk of social unrest if the gulf in living standards becomes too great. And particularly if you see very conspicuous consumption on extravagant luxury goods and very top-range cars.
China has a tradition of gift-giving, and in recent times it has become common for politicians and government officials to bestow lavish gifts for political and personal gain. Mr. Biswas says, for the ordinary Chinese, this practice thinks of corruption and an arguable abuse of public money.
Many of the big companies in China are still state-owned. So even if it's not the actual government departments, where I think there's probably strict control still on such gift-giving, I think the bigger concern would be the large state-owned companies, including large banks or other large government enterprises, where they are doing these corporate practices of giving gifts, and the scale of such gift-giving has just become too extravagant in the context of the social disparities and also fears about increasing corruption as well.
The government fears unless corruption is weeded out, the survival of the Communist Party could be in jeopardy. Chen Xindong, an analyst with BT Paribas Peregrine Securities in Beijing, says the government has now brought in a ruling that would make it illegal for lavish goods to be given as gifts.
The Chinese Communist Party Discipline Inspection Department made one point clear that it's not only those official who takes bribery will be punished, but for those businessmen who give the bribery to official, exceeding 10,000 RMB is subjectable to the criminal charge.
So will these curbs on spending and advertisements of luxury goods have an impact on the suppliers of these items? not in the long term, says Mr. Chen.
I think for the time being and for a certain period of time, it should be quite significant compared to the previous years. However, it does not mean, well, on the one hand, the governments will try to restrict consumptions on luxury goods. It's not for ordinary rich Chinese. They actually does not have any limitation for that. So therefore, the luxury goods sales in the future will be targeting to the normal consumption rather than to be used as a tool for corruptions or bribery.
It's a view that Mr. Biswas shares.
The Chinese economic growth story is so phenomenal that there'll still be plenty of private sector gift-giving continuing, and that will continue to support relatively strong growth in China as the world's probably fastest-growing luxury market for many years to come.
China's bans are not going to stop producers of luxury goods from tapping into this rich market. In fact, wealthy Chinese are now going abroad on spending sprees. And it's not unusual for producers of branded goods to unveil limited editions of an item to lure them. Last year, Rolls-Royce Year of the Dragon Phantom car, priced at more than $1.3 million, were all sold out within 8 weeks. Mr. Chen says the government is not against luxury goods. Rather, its recent bans are aimed at curbing corruption.
High-end luxury goods, the control or the government try to water down this consumption is because it is a lot of corruption related. But that's not mean China want to kill consumption appetites for the high-end consumer goods.
And that report comes to us from Radio Australia's Kandahar Sepati. Ricochet. Well, this is a name that, of course, many of you may not be familiar with. He has been on the program before to talk about his book called Radio Chopsticks, which is a fascinating read. Rick and I go back about 12 years. We worked together at China Radio International. Combining Rick's experience and my experience, if we put it together, there's almost like 60 years of experience tossed in there. So when Rick and I get together, we like talking about radio and we like talking about the future of broadcasting. And what could change and what will be changing? Because there are some programmers, of course, that, well, don't change with the times. And they continue doing radio like they did 100 years ago. Anyway, I thought we would have Rick back this week because the last time he was here, we didn't get into it that much. But we're going to get into it a little bit more today.
I did go through that period of time when people thought that live was better than recorded. But actually, what I learned over the years is that the listeners deserve a better program. So better is better. Not live is better. I've heard live fall apart and sound so disjointed and not even the whole deal is, can you make a better radio program? However you make it, you make it. You know, I was watching American Idol the other day and I could swear that it was recorded. Get what I mean? How many of those things, when you watch TV, nobody sits there and goes, man, is this live? Is this not live? When you watch all those singing contests and every reality show, they're all recorded, they're all edited because they can make a better program on TV in an edited form. And in radio, it's the same thing, Keith. It's not a matter of whether it's live or not. The listener doesn't care. They just care, is it better or not?
You know, and that's the thing we're discussing, because when you were at China Radio International, you did a show called Joy FM for many, many years. And a lot of listeners thought that you mm-hmm. and Wang Lu or Jade went in there every night to do it.
Okay, let's look at it this way, Keith. I did the program. It was on the air every night, 7 nights a week for 11 years. Who would give up their life to do a radio program live 2 hours every night for 11 years, 4,000 programs? I don't know anybody that would do that. So actually, they thought we were live because here's the key word, lively is better than live. It's much more important to be lively because there are live programs where people sound dead. And I can tell you that for sure. I've heard some of those programs, but lively is really the key.
So let me ask you then, why is there this conception that live sounds better? Where did this come from? And I mean, of course, there was a time when, I mean, if you go back 60 years, programs had to be live because there was no way of recording it. It was singer Bing Crosby who changed that when he invested in a small company called Ampex. so he can record his show, The Bean Crosby Show. And he was asked by an interviewer one time, why do you want to record your show? He said, well, because I want to go and play golf. I can record three shows at one time.
Yeah, I think it really is a perception of radio. We don't have to blow the perception. I mean, I'm a guy who has directed radio stations. My background is directing radio stations and coming up with concepts that are executed on the air 24 hours a day. So one of the things about in my book was Space Station Kula in Hawaii, and actually we were broadcasting from outer space. So my point is this: people's perception is much more important than the reality of how you put it out there. So if they think it's live, I never ever said we were broadcasting from outer space in Hawaii. We said, coming down at you from the skies above Hawaii, Spaten Kula. Well, use your imagination. And the same thing with my radio program that was actually the number one amateur radio for many years. And the fact that people thought it was live, all I had to do is just not tell them it's live. I never lied about it. Never. I said, we're coming to you live. Never. All we said was, Tuesday night, come to the program. Here I am with Wang Lu, blah, 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 like that.
So then, let me ask you then, why is it there are some programmers, we're not going to mention any names, but why do some programmers still insist that live radio is better? Why are they doing that?
Well, I think it has something to do with their salaries. It's this old, because a lot of people like to promote they're living off an old-fashioned concept of radio. And the old-fashioned concept is, and you know this, many radio stations have gone to a computerized programming where the guy in between, the DJ, the announcer, will talk. And then if it's a music station, they add his talk to the music, and they don't have to pay him for a full week's salary. They only have to pay him for 2 hours of recording his voice. He goes in, and he does the program. And they use that, and that makes a week's worth of programs for 2 hours of talking. So we know how computers work, and we can do this. But I think radio stations that are still promoting that whole live aspect are old-fashioned. I mean, the real deal is there is an internet, there's radio, there's so many things to do. Radio has gone down as it is, you know, listenership because of the internet. What a surprise. No surprise at all. And I think there's a lot of people holding on to their jobs, and they're convincing the people that they work for that it must be live because live is better. But if you ask a listener just goes, you know, I listen to this station because it sounds better. That's it. That's the bottom line. I'm more interested in this station because it sounds better. But I think a lot of people do like to promote that whole live aspect because, well, they thought it was really important. Years ago, you know, when we were kids, it was important. It was the thing that connected people. Radio connected many, many people. And you could hear a guy calling in from 100 miles away. And then there's a discussion on the air, and you go, wow, this really reaches a long distance. But radio has gone into a different form now. It's not as important to get those listeners' calls. It's more important by what you're putting out on the radio.
Of course, technology has played an important role in this. In 2010, I recorded an edition of Happy Station in Singapore, and it was funny. I was telling people how we did it. I said, you know, I recorded everything in Singapore. As I was flying back to Taiwan in the plane, I edited the show, mixed the show, and then I used the onboard internet service in Singapore Airlines to upload the show to the FTP. When I arrived back in Taiwan 2 hours later, the show was there, ready to go. it's amazing because if I think about, you know, how I used to do radio 20 years ago, going out with a high-quality cassette recorder, dubbing it onto open reel, taking forever just to mix something.
Well, if we really compare mediums, what I'm thinking is, you know, when I was watching The Dark Knight Rises. Did you see that, Batman?
Yes, I did.
Over this, you know, this past year, And I'm pretty sure that movie actually was filmed in sequence from the beginning to the end, and it only shot, you know, it was like a three-hour movie. So I think they shot that movie in one day, which is my sarcasm, Keith. People think that a movie is made. People think of movies are made in an hour and a half, right?
Right.
Well, they must have started the movie here, and then they moved to the next scene, and they shot it like in 1 or 2 days, and then they edited it together, and it was shot in sequence. But actually, it's not like that, and it hasn't been like that probably ever. And even TV shows that you watch are not shot in sequence from the beginning to the end. So if TV can do it, if movies can do it, radio should do it also. They're all electronic mediums, and it just falls into that. So the whole live aspect is, yes, you could do TV live. I've done live TV before, and it's okay. But nobody sat there and said, this is live, it's better. They said, make it better. So whatever you're doing, just make it better.
Okay, so Rick, let me say I got together some 5 programmers that all said, okay, you know what? We want to do live programming because live is better. What would you turn and say to them? Say, first of all, being diplomatic and then not being diplomatic.
Okay, being diplomatic, I would say I have produced many, many, many thousands of hours of radio that were pre-recorded, and I had the number one radio station and the number one radio programs. So I'm thinking that live was not necessarily better. And in fact, there were live programs on the same station that we found were not as good as my program, but my program was number one, and everybody thought it was lively.
And if you were being undiplomatic... But of course, watch your language.
I'll watch the language. I'll say, are you guys kidding? You think that live is better? How old are you? 50, 60, 70, 80 years old? In the old days, that was better because that was the only way to do radio. But it's not the live thing that matters. I mean, if you want to play games with a couple of people, of course, you have to do it live. You can't do that recorded. But what can you do and what can't you do with radio? And my real question is, if these guys were so good at radio, why has radio dropped down considerably because of the internet? So what's better? What's the deal? And I think people have to look realistically at the electronic medium and say the internet is way more important than radio, but radio has a place. So figure out the place. And the place is not to play games with 10-year-olds on the radio and really make them feel happy, although that might even be a market. Who knows? But I don't know. All I could say is, you know, I mean, if it was really good radio, like I listen to the best radio in the world. I listen on the internet. It's an actual satellite radio from the States. And that's the best radio that I listen to on the net. And, of course, your programs, Keith. But I have to throw that in there. But as I listen to radio, I just look for good radio around the world. I don't look for live or not, ever.
You know, I don't know if you're like me, but one thing that I love is actually listening to old radio stories. And earlier on, I mentioned Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. And there was an interview that I read from a number of years ago that was done with his producer. And he was talking about when Bean invested in Ampex to find a way to record shows on tape, because previously everything had to be done on these very large 16-inch transcription discs where you couldn't edit, and there was just a real pain. And he said what they would do with the Bing Crosby show is, he says, they would record in maybe 2 days, 2-3 days, six or seven shows. They were all longer than 30 minutes, maybe 40, 45 minutes. And then they would sit down and edit them together. They would take a laugh from one show. Maybe the joke got a better response. So they would take the joke, cut it in. Mm-hmm. And he said it actually made the show sound better than when Bean was doing it live. And then when he was doing it live to transcription disc, he said it was a whole different concept. And he said ABC and that was carrying the Philco show, and also NBC, thought that he was crazy and were so against him doing that. And he said in many ways, Bing Crosby saw the future in doing radio this way, to make it tighter, to make it better. If something's not done right, if there's a mistake somewhere, a bad mistake, he said, you can easily go back and redo it.
You know, the creator, what we do is we create something on radio. And by creating something on radio, I mean, Bing Crosby was absolutely right. I would much, if you ask me, would I rather do a live program or recorded? I'd say recorded, absolutely, because the audience deserves a better program. And if you can make the programs better by editing out the crap, then you've got a better program. And the audience deserves it. And I think radio has to really define itself, redefine itself as to its place in society. I don't run into, you know, I don't walk around and people don't say, hey, man, did you hear what was on the radio last night? They talk about many, many other things, but they don't talk to me about that. Nobody mentions it to me.
You know, another guy, Rick, actually, that was against doing anything live was Dean Martin. You probably remember the old Dean Martin show.
Of course.
You know, there's a funny story around how he got that gig, because he initially didn't want to do it because NBC wanted him to do the show live. But Dean was more interested in playing golf and taking it easy. So he came up with this list of demands. First, it was this outrageous salary. And then he said, I want to be able to come in on the day we record the show and only stay around for 30 minutes and then leave right away. And he said what they would do is they would record the show, but they would record it in, they, you know, the audience would be there for like 3 hours. They would record it all basically in one take, everything, and then afterward they would take the 3 hours and try to condense it down to 50 minutes.
Right, of course. Of course. Take the good parts, the audience. It always comes down to this, Keith. It always comes down to the audience deserves your best work. And if you can cut out, you know, live is sometimes good. I'm not saying you should never do live radio or never do live TV. But I am sure that I'd say 95% of the things that we watch or listen to are recorded. And that's just because it works better.
I was reading a really interesting piece the other day about an engineer in the United Kingdom who's trying to come up, who's creating a system where you can have on-air announcers, but actually it's not done by a person, it's actually done by a computer, the whole station. And he presented a little sample when he was at the Las Vegas Technology Show, and people were surprised.
I think this is definitely a part of the future. I'm surprised, but I know that they can do books where they read the books, right? You've got the person reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
You write a book, and you can have the audio made by a computer.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose a male or female voice. So it's definitely possible, because the audiobooks are sometimes made like that. It doesn't even cost that much to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the audiobooks are reading the words, and it turns into words. Somebody reads it. I talk to my telephone every day. Siri tells me what the weather's like. Siri tells me whether it's going to snow or not. I love it. I just love talking to it. Not only that, sometimes Siri just addresses me as Rick. And I go, how does my phone know that? So the voice on my iPhone is just incredible. Well, look what's happening there. It's almost like having a real radio program, isn't it?
It is. You know, the funny thing about Siri is all this technology that we're using, Rick, if you watch old science fiction shows like Star Trek, they were using it in that TV show.
Of course. Look at their phones. Look at the phones they were using.
Yeah.
Those phones, they would flip open, you know, and here's Sulu, and they're all talking to each other. And they were using the flip-open phones, which are old-fashioned now. Now we're using the smartphones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, when they used to flip those phones open, you go, wow. And that was how many years ago? So they did predict the future. In the future, actually, you won't need a radio transmitter. All you'll need is a chip in your brain. And if you turn your ear, if you twist your ear, you'll be able to pick up your program. And many other programs, because it'll be embedded in your ear.
Well, you know, something, Rick, that's actually causing a bit of controversy among some of the more traditional type radio stations in Taiwan is now if you buy a car from certain brands, Mercedes and Toyota, the car also includes a Wi-Fi radio.
Right.
And all you do is you put the SIM card inside the radio, and you can listen to stations on the net in your car.
Is that great?
And it's fantastic. But you know what? The more traditional radio stations, the Chinese ones and the one like ICRT, for example, they were so against the car companies doing this.
I wonder why.
I wonder why. Yeah.
Do you mean somebody might be out of a job because they didn't advance with the times?
You know, it's fantastic. I was in one of these cars last summer. And I was meeting with a friend of mine. We were driving around Taipei, and he said, "Oh, I got one of these new Wi-Fi car radio sets, right? And it is fantastic. You can listen like to Howard Stern.
Yep.
You can listen to a station from Japan. You can listen to even, you know, there's a number of services out there that offer nonstop continuous music. There's one that I listen to, I can't remember the name right now, but they have something like 300 channels of just 24-hour music nonstop. Every music form you can imagine in really, you know, high definition, fantastic quality. No announcers or nothing.
As you know, I was working on a satellite radio that would have covered all of Asia, and it would have been above China, and all of those stations were to be computerized and very little talk or no talk at all, and would have been continuous music all the time. So I know quite a bit about this. And people just love, sometimes that's all you want. You know, people are, what happens, there's not a general broadcast anymore. It's very specific and narrow. So if you're into classical music, you don't need to listen between 10 o'clock at night and 11 o'clock at night, you know, where some station might play classical. You can listen to classical 24 hours a day, or jazz 24 hours a day, and pop music 24 hours a day, and Mandarin 24 hours a day, and Cantonese 24 hours a day, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that is the future of broadcasting, because now radio stations, they can't take for granted that they can, that they've got their listeners. If I'm a listener to radio and I'm listening for music, if I have to listen 1 hour to hear one song I really like, I'd rather listen to my iPhone, which has how many songs on it, 7,000 or whatever, and I can listen to, I know that I'm 5 seconds away from a song I like. So this is the changing world. It has changed. But for certain kinds of broadcasting, kind of like what you're doing, there's still a demand for it. There's still a need for it. You still fill a certain void.
And that was my good buddy, Rick O'Shea, and he joined me to talk about the future of commercial radio. And guess what? We're out of time. Once again, if you wish to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can also listen to this program again at www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word, or even through the website of the World Radio Network, WRN.org. So on behalf of Dan Hensley and Paulette McQuarrie, this is Keith Pellon wishing you well. We'll see you in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.